I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first speaker and see if I can do it. This is Stephen Nkansa Amankra. He's a PhD and PH and master's in the School of Health Sciences at Central Michigan University, a stone throw from my home turf of Toledo. He also works at Somerset Christian College in the Department of Organizational Leadership, and that's in New Jersey, is that right? And he's currently an assistant professor at Central Michigan, previously worked at the United Nations Population Fund and Save the Children in the UK, a number of publications. His current research is in psychiatric maternal epidemiology. It's an attempt to illuminate on the general stigma associated with mental health, particularly in prenatal women. Passionate about public health and views, views improved population health is central to economic growth and development. Sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Rose, and thank you for coming to listen to a very unusual conversation that I believe, as the chairman said, public health, somehow we have been reticent. We don't want to discuss. So today my presentation is examining the relationship between the emergence of neoliberalization, health poverty, and the incarceration. And I'm sure these are new things. So I try to examine relationships and try to see what people have written, the research indicates. So the first slide just indicates the phases of poverty in this country and incarceration, which is quite familiar. And that's what I'm going to talk about. And just to say that, as usual, my disclosure, I have no financial inducement in presenting this. Just this is for purely intellectual and academic discussions. Again, phases of poverty. Okay, so my purpose is first to demonstrate links among these neoliberalizations, which I'm going to define, poverty and health. In particular, health disparities, we know what has been emerging, difference in health outcomes that are strictly not related to genetics or biological basis of the different racial groups. And I also look at how the emergence of neoliberalization in the 80s has created a route for mass incarceration, particularly among the minority populations. And of late, for the past 10 years, women have become much of victims being incarcerated in the prison industrial complex in this country. And then to look at what we are very familiar with as public health practitioners, social justice. That is what they call the bedrock of public health. And see how we can apply those principles to see whether we can, whatever, wherever we work, what we can do to somehow reduce the effect of the factors related to incarceration among minority groups, and women in particular. So I start with simple assertions that in the United States, among minority groups, diseases and incarceration occur uniquely among these groups. And then they are also impacted in terms of political and social disparities. They are the ones who are most affected. And then the higher proportion, particularly African Americans and Hispanics and other non-whites, are negatively affected by. And of course, as I said, gender, issues of gender, women are now being more incarcerated than men in the last 10 years. So let me give a little background of neoliberalization, and the concept comes from the 18th century economist Adam Smith. I'm sure we are all familiar in his theory, Wealth of Nations, when he proposes that, of course, governments should allow trade and there should be minimal regulation. In other words, unfettered attempt to trade and regulation should not be the business of government. Now, one could argue that that's the basis of capitalism. Yes, that is true. But these concepts were applied differently in different countries. Now, in the case of the United States, we are all we are familiar with the Great Depression. These were the principles on federal regulation and trade, and somehow we observe the Great Depression, the 1920s, and then came in the different model. It was thought that it's better that government must rather regulate, government must rather intervene in areas where the individuals really fell short. And so we have the Keynesian model that came in, and that provided a lot of buffer in terms of social welfare to people. And that was the modus operandi. for economic assistance in this country up to the latter 1970s, and then came in the 80s with the new ideas about how the economic systems and management systems should manage. So with ascendancy of Reagan coming to power, that gave a lot of impetus for neoconservatives to really believe that government has no business in providing social support. Government has no business in the regulation. And I think these same ideas is resonant in our contemporary times. So the point about it is that the idea of neoliberalism, just not just economic framework, it also promotes the whole idea of individual responsibility. And I'll talk about it shortly. There are times, yes, I think the issue is that nobody is saying individual has no responsibility, but there are times that individual responsibility is extremely limited, and that is reflected in, in case of public health, we are interested in upstream approaches, but in case of neoliberal ideas, it's more about individual, and I think the infamous phrase by Margaret Thatcher that there are nothing like societies, it's only individuals, men and women, their families, aptly captures this whole idea of neoliberal concept. It's about individual. So, and it's not surprising, in my opinion, when you look at the past 30 years mass incarceration, when you look at the fact that across all the industrialized countries of the world, U.S. incarcerate more people than any other group, and then the fact also that crime has been declining ever since. So you have the kind of disparity. So that's just a little background. So the point is that neoliberalism is not just economic theory, but it's also social policy that are pursued by people recently described as neoconservatives. And I must also say that when I talk about neoconservatives, there are some kind of differences. Some is about fiscal conservatives and some promotion of family values. But in terms of politics, the idea of neoliberalism is being promoted well by the contemporary conservatives. Okay, so what is seen since 1980, what I did with my team was to look at what has been published between 1980 to 2006 and to find out, really, to see the relationship between before 1980s, incarceration, health, and poverty, and then thereafter, because Reagan really did promote the idea of neoliberalization together with the other Margaret Thatcher in particular. So, as I said, I will have more discussions about some details of the concept that I have just enumerated. So one of the things that has been observed is that unprecedented growth in prison population is on par compared to the previous, before 1980s. It's on par. And as I indicated, it doesn't commensurate with rise in crime. And when you look at other industrialized countries with similar pattern of crime, I mean, you can't compare. So one can really conclude that there's something uniquely, and maybe I'll leave for discussion whether it's part of American exceptionalism. But the point about it is that when you compare similar country, industrial country, U.S. incarcerate more, and the punitive measures are more severe than it is in other industrialized countries. And so this has led to large expansion that has been also been described as a prison industrial complex. I'll have time to talk about it briefly. And the issue, so what we did was to look at the literature, what has been published, and unfortunately we really couldn't find an empirical data to determine. So most of the time what we found was that we use critical commentary, we use some narratives to draw conclusions about the pattern of poverty and the negative health outcomes and incarceration. So in essence, that's exactly what we did. And so far, there hasn't been any empirical assessment, not even the natural, even quasi-natural experiment. So we said we relied on indirect evidence of correlational studies and expert commentaries and critical reflections. So one of the things that we found was that first, evidence one, public goods provide critical safety nets for poor and population well-being. This is undeniable. I mean, when you look at the Keynesian model that was enacted after during the time of Great Depression, helped many people to move out. And also, during this time, government took a lot of leadership roles in terms of innovations, in terms of even improving many health outcomes. And also, interestingly, one of the earlier health meetings that were held around 1900, during Teddy Roosevelt's time, around 1909, was through the government initiative, the idea about trying to minimize child labor and then reducing maternal mortality and improving the number of health outcomes. So the point here was that when you look at the previous eras, government had actually taken a leading role and has been instrumental in improving a number of health outcomes. But then when you examine the literature concerning 1980s, what we saw was that a lot of funding cuts, a lot of decentralized measures have been put in place. And all these are all core cardinal principles of what encapsulates in neoliberalization. So health obviously became poorer, particularly women's health, and of course that's my one of the things I'm very much interested in. Infant death was recorded higher compared to previous eras and compared to other industrialized countries. And then maternal mortality also higher compared to previous eras. And again, when you situate this understanding to the fact that in previous eras there has been dramatic reductions, and then in the 80s things begin to turn around. And then again, that's what you call public goods. I mean, the air we breathe in, the environment, if there's no regulation, these are things that you can buy with any quantity. But one of the things about neoliberalization is that they believe strongly that regulation impedes growth of business. And indeed, that's one of the principles of what Adam Smith proposed in 1776 in The Wealth of Nations. So these are ideas. So no regulation, and I'm sure this concept even now resonates with our podcast discussions. And then they believe that a private market is the instrument for growth of the economy. And we also know that the economy can actually grow when people will not benefit. And one other principle also was that, well, as a result of the economic growth, it will trickle down, people will benefit. And again, in many other states, this has been proven to be false. Only targeted government interventions that can improve the outcomes of people. And again, when you talk about many of the public goods and things that benefit people, private sector obviously cannot and may not be able to undertake that. So in other words, think of innovations in vaccine technology, what you can think about. Many of these were things that government initiated. And again, since 1980s onwards, that's our timeline that we set, that there has been that dramatic decline in government support. Rather, there has been more emphasis on, let's say, private sector. And again, I must emphasize that my study was not against the idea of private innovations. No, the idea of how government is limiting itself, divesting itself from social programs. And then one of the things that also we also examined was to look at education. And I think at this time, I don't need to discuss extensively the relationship between education and health. It's obvious. But again, from 1980s onwards, there was really dramatic decline in support, particularly in low-income communities. And I'm sure the emergence of charter schools became more prominent. And guess what? Charter schools always, it's public funding that goes into private individuals. So the idea of charter schools, I think, is that it benefits people. It's something that needs to be taken a critical look, because public funding and then it's private ownership. And this was one of the things about neoliberalization from the 80s onwards. So in other words, the idea was that promote private sector even to the extent of making it like a commodity. And health as a commodity is something that has been really intensively promoted over the last 30 years. And then evidently, compared 1970s and then 80s onwards, poverty among all racial groups soared precipitously. However, when you stratify among the racial groups, obviously the minority groups, black, Hispanics, were the ones that were most affected. And again, these are core ideas about neoliberalization. And one thing that I also want to emphasize is that The idea of promoting individual responsibility is not a bad idea, but if you do not take into consideration the underlying social disparities, I think in the end you end up blaming the individual. Well, there are certain things, there are a lot of things that individual has no control, and we know this as from public health perspective. But this, so in essence, some of the things that public health believes personally runs counter to the idea of pushing individual responsibility. Individual must be responsible for this or that and that. And then what I'm going to examine now is briefly to examine the whole idea of social justice. So in other words, looking at what we have discussed so far concerning making individual the centerpiece of his or her life, promoting well-being, government, reducing government funding, promoting unfettered regulation, what that means is that many of the things, as I said, runs counter to public health beliefs in public health principles of collectivism as against individualism promoted in neoliberalization. So in terms of social justice, what public health has always promoted is fair and equitable distribution of whatever outcome. So in terms of diseases, in terms of social outcomes, in terms of education, you want to make sure that equitable distribution. It doesn't matter whether you have money, you don't have money. But again, looking at the insurance, there are people who, because they don't have insurance, or they are underinsured. The access to healthcare system and the access to even education has become limited over the past 30 years. And I must also emphasize that when we talk about neoliberalization, it is not a question of maybe only Republicans. I mean, to be fair, Democrats have pursued neoliberal ideas, except that when we look at the period of 30 years from 1980, it is true that Republicans have had more power in governance than Democrats. But the point is that in some way, Democrats are also guilty. They have done it. But of course, you cannot compare that to what Republicans have done so far. So bringing the idea of the social justice perspective, one can clearly look at even from point of health, from point of incarceration, from point of poverty. For example, in terms of incarceration, we know that majority white population use more drugs, about 15% of black, but invariably about 35-50% blacks are incarcerated. Obviously, this is not fair. And part we can think about, why is this so? Of course, if you are poor, you cannot access the social, the justice system, criminal justice system in this country. So, to be fair and to be balanced in this view, I think one of the things that we try to put across that it's easy to look at minority and say they have poor health, even though the health disparities are not based on biological basis, but the social outcome. The question is that we also see that public health is an area of examining the broader context of governmental policies, examining the broader context of how funding support, how communities are supported, is not what has been going on. More is about individuals. So one of the things that we said towards the end of this conclusion was for us to begin to think not just individual responsibility per se, but also begin to think about the role of broader social context. So this is what we have come to live with: neoliberalization, promoting market principles, commodifying health, looking at health as a commodity, and prison system also as a business. This is what we have come to live with. I think oftentimes people have argued that these are bigger things. What has public health's role in all these bigger contexts? Again, this is something for us to think, and I think that just like it was done over 100 years ago, where public health activists mobilized against some health disparities, poor health, I think this is something that we also need to begin to think of. And again, it's our core beliefs about public health in terms of a fair system of cooperation embedded in social justice. Of course, it's inconsistent. So again, the question should be, what is the balance that must be in place? So again, when you look at, as I said, when you look at the widened health disparities, that's widened between 1980s when neoliberalization became more embedded as a political economic structure of this country compared to the previous era. So one of the things is that the minority groups and women in particular have been much disadvantaged. And as I said, we need, as a public health practitioner, to begin to look, examine the role of broader context in terms of health disparities, not just individual factors, but also to look at it, also link it to incarceration and also link it to poverty. So this is the end of my presentation about neoliberalization and poverty, health, and incarceration. Thank you for your attention.